Good morning, everyone. I'm Vic Phillips, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's wonderful, of course, to be at another international convention. How many people here aren't from the Western Canada region? Good. Welcome. Not from the Western Canada region. I recognize most of those who are. And thank you for coming. It's very, I'm honored to share on Area 78 and the Western Canada region entirely. It's a wonderful part of AA. I began my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous on April 19th, 1990, and chose the Sundry Town and Country group as my home group. And that was a good experience for me. In AA, I ended up being the only member for a while, and so that sits really solid in my AA history as having to take some responsibility, you know. And I always feel that that's a big part of Alcoholics Anonymous in Area 78. It's been a strong component. There were plenty of long timers around at that time to keep me on track. Help me work the steps, and I was directed to, you know, toward all three legacies of AA, and for that I'm forever grateful, because it's a vast change that took place in my perception of the world as a result. The magic of the fellowship and the incredible rewards of experiencing unity in AA were something that came naturally in Area 78 because of the involvement and the enthusiasm. So wonderful to be here. I don't want to start this talk until I mention that the area west of us, Area 79, British Columbia, Yukon, is not mentioned here, and I really, really strongly feel they deserve mention, you know, as part of the Western Canada region. Marty W. used to describe the area, at least in part, as the only area in Canada that has a Pacific island, and he was pleased with that, and it's true. It's a vast area stretching all the way to the Yukon and Arctic Ocean, and parallels Area 78 in many ways. And of course, that's in 10 years where the International will be held in Vancouver. So very pleased to be neighbors of British Columbia and the Yukon. Area 78 itself comprises the Western Canada province of Alberta, the Northwest Territories, a large part of Nunavut Territory, two small corners of British Columbia that are located, that are isolated by mountain ranges, and one meeting in Saskatchewan. And again, in reference to Marty W., he and I often had diplomatic discussions about the expansionary attitude of Area 78, but we resolved that. It hasn't grown any since, and it really isn't aggressive. But we do take in a large area. It's significant that Area 78 is the largest of the 93 areas, but it's the dimensions of the area, I think, that are its actual size that makes it geographically unique. And I've just, for the fun of it, tried to develop a way of explaining this, and I've done this before in different ways, but looking at the at an atlas, I was able to determine that from its southern border with Montana to its northern border in Arctic Nunavut is 2,300 miles, and that is about the same distance as it is from its southern border to Mexico City. So it is large in that respect. The The distance from the southern border to Inuvik is the same as the distance from its southern border to El Paso on the Rio Grande, and Inuvik, of course, is on the Mackenzie. Now, there are alcoholics up there, you know. In fact, our area treasurer comes from Inuvik, so he has a distance to travel, which makes it an interesting area to plan things in. The width is pretty wide too. It stretches from the Continental Divide in the Rockies to the Atlantic waters of the Hudson Bay. So it's theoretically it's all of North America, but it isn't. Along with that. Geography, the fact that we have a lot of remote communities geographically, are accessible only by float plane and some linked only by water. But it's the cultural diversity of Area 78 that is interesting as well. Native North Americans inhabit every corner of the area. Cree and Blackfoot are predominant on the prairie. Chippewan and Dene occupy the northern woodlands and southern tundra regions. And the Inuit are at home in the along the coast and the islands of the Arctic. Ocean of the Arctic Ocean, that is, yeah. The non-native population, of course, is largely British and European. Of descent, but we have large numbers of Chinese, Japanese, and more recently, of course, with a rather healthy economic condition, there have been a large flow of immigrants from all around the world. So our cultural diversity is continuously creating a greater and greater challenge of carrying the message. Now, a little bit of history. Archival records indicate that Alcoholics Anonymous surfaced in Alberta in the mid-1940s, with the first communications on record to New York being from John L. on March 11, 1945, and then Edward L. June 18, 1945. And the latter wrote, "Calgary has no Alcoholics Anonymous organization, but lots of us who should be members." That hasn't changed. Well, it's changed that we have organization now. George C. in Edmonton on July 11, 1945 reported, "We wish to advise you that an Edmonton chapter of AA has recently been organized." And by October 1945, a group had been started in Calgary as well. So we're off the ground pretty quickly. And so was Area 78 connection with the General Service Conference structure. Began pretty much right away with the development of the conference. George D. attended as a Panel 2 delegate to the General Service Conference in 1952 and in 1953, and the connection has remained unbroken and has really strengthened ever since. In 1992, the area adopted a committee system that parallels the conference. And in 2005, we held our first pre-conference assembly to address conference issues and more specifically to send our delegate off to New York with the area's group conscience on AA business. Within Area 78, there are 550 groups currently busy carrying the message. Not all are connected to the assembly. And to the conference structure, but it is not for lack of a continuous effort on the part of the area officers and district committee members. It's a very active and alive body. March and September assemblies are held in a central location. They're well attended. Two area committee meetings are held each year at locations around the province for the purpose of carrying the message of service as much as possible. to local areas. And we're not a glum lot there either. I don't see Dave here. He always emphasizes that. But there's a lot of, countless, really. I mean, I wouldn't even want to start to identify them all. Beef suppers and potluck gatherings and roundups and campouts. And so it's a lot of social activities. A lot of service workshops and sharing sessions are common. And it's significant, I think, that Area 78 is a strong contributor. If you look at the back of the conference reports, you'll see Area 78 is a strong contributor to the General Service Office. And at one time, there were actually three members of the General Service Board serving at the same time that came from Area 78. And they just happened to be all here. One is Ray back there, Leonard, and myself. And that was a good representation, you know. I don't think we gained any benefits for Area 78, nor did we try. But I suppose we had the opportunity under a different regime, you know, or a different way of doing things. But it's significant that that Area 78 is connected and has an awareness, a good awareness of the big picture in AA, and for that I'm, you know, both pleased. I've been honored to be part of it, and happy that it continues on. I'm sure it will. I think the biggest problem in Area 78, that the more insurmountable problem it seems, is carrying the message into these remote locations, across the hurdles of diverse culture and language, where Alcoholics Anonymous is often needed and wanted, but doesn't really exist. Where AA flourishes in more heavily populated areas, and where it's been around for a while, it's common for us to suggest to newcomers, you know, get a big book, go to meetings, get a sponsor, choose a home group, and become involved, because we hope they'll benefit just as we did from all three legacies of AA, the recovery, unity, and service. But being practical, when we're speaking to a newcomer who's returning to an isolated community where there's no ongoing group, such as those coming out of a lot of treatment centers and other ways that they find AA, we can really only suggest getting a big book. He won't have people to sit across from, you know, members of the fellowship to visit with casually, and he won't have perhaps even a sponsor locally. That's the way those a lot of those communities are, and so. Nor will he have the opportunity to, you know, as we often say, open the door and put on the coffee and clean the ashtrays and those things that got a lot of us, you know, feeling at home in AA and involved. So it's difficult for newcomers in remote areas. We have to, you know, encourage them to take that responsibility, and that's a lot of responsibility for newcomers. But as I said myself, you know, I started in a group that where I was the only member, and it really, if we can encourage that, it really is a very solid foundation to sobriety, you know, if they will. So, just as Alcoholics Anonymous sprang to life and grew in its infancy all over the continent, in the face of cultural and social stigma, it wasn't different entirely in the 1930s and 40s. It must find a toehold there. Bill W. said, AA groups must survive or the individual will perish. And I don't think we can ever forget that. So, as Leonard mentioned, you know, my brief history in Alcoholics Anonymous has been a rewarding one, and I have to always think back to Area 78 and how encouraging those people were all the way through my service experience, always supportive, you know, always emphasizing the importance. And I always, always, always thank those people who I knew along the way for bringing me, you know, along as eventually delegate and eventually Western Canada Regional Trustee. It's an honor that is impossible to describe, and I'll never have enough gratitude or express enough gratitude, probably. Area 78 has a vast diversity, and I think it's safe to describe it. I feel comfortable describing it as a microcosm of AA as a whole. It have a wonderful history of alcoholics finding spiritual release from this hopeless state of mind and body. We offer hope and promise to the newcomer at the door. You know, we offer something that will replace that dependence on alcohol, and I think we do it very well. And we have a lot of work to do, just like the rest of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we will continue to do it. I see many faces out there of past servants in Area 78, and it's always good to be at an event like this and join with everyone again, and others that I've met along the way, which are so many smiling faces, and it's marvelous to be a part of this fellowship. So thank you very much for allowing me to present for a few minutes on Area 78, and I wish everyone here a wonderful, wonderful time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vic. You know, it's interesting to hear some of the history of AA in Alberta, because Alberta was where I made my career in the alcoholism business. And much of the history of AA paralleled my own career development, but also intertwined with my career over and over again, so that my career wouldn't have been possible without the support and assistance and encouragement of many of the AA members in Alberta. And when I was taken to my first AA meeting 49 years ago, and I've been a visitor to AA ever since then and a supporter, it's made my career, and I've seen third generations of the originals come through AA, come through our treatment programs in Alberta, and get sober and stay sober. So I myself own a great debt of gratitude to AA in our area. And with that, now I'd like to call on our next speaker, Robin. Robin was a delegate from Manitoba to the General Service Conference, and she'll now share her message, please.
Hi, everyone. My name's Robin, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's nice to see everybody here this morning. It's not lost on me this morning that I'm the only one up here who's not a past trustee. Okay? I just was thinking about that. And I served with all these men, you know, and I have to point out that Vic and I were panel 54 delegates together, so everything he knows I taught him, you know. And our other panel 54 delegate from Western Canada is here, Randy. So, Randy, wave to the crowd. The three of us had a marvelous time at the conference. So, anyway. I had the honor of serving as a panel 54 delegate for Area 80, which is Manitoba, and it's much smaller than Vic's. I'm not the most comfortable speaker, I have to tell you. You know, I'm a little out of practice for one thing, but I do best if I tell a story. So I'm going to tell you a story this morning, okay? So, because that's how I do best. And before I start that, I just want to say that my story, it's about my home group, but it encompasses the history of AA starting in Manitoba, and I think that's how it got started up in a lot of the West. So a lot of you will relate to it, I think. And I just want to send some love out there to the archivists in AA, including Joanne, our Area 80 archivist, who helped me out. I mean, you know, they don't get a lot of affection, and they work hard. So give your archivists some love next time you see them, okay? Okay. Anyways, my home group is the Winnipeg Women's Group in Winnipeg. I'm also a member of the First Step Group, which is this big, mixed group, but I consider the Winnipeg Women's Group my home group. And I've gone to both those groups since I sobered up 24 years ago. In AA in Manitoba began in 1944. And we were really, really lucky in Manitoba. There was a Newfoundlander who moved to Manitoba to become a doctor. And in 1942, he became the provincial psychiatrist. His name was Dr. Alex Pincock. But before that, he had worked at the Brannan Mental Hospital in Manitoba for about 12 years. And he was a wonderful man. And at that time, if you look back on the sort of history of alcoholism, there was no solution. And they were terribly frustrated because the psych wards were full of people that they would bring in because they were insane. They would dry them out. They would treat their withdrawal. They'd seem to be pretty normal, so they'd let them back out. And then they would go back to drinking and become nuts again. And so there was no long-term solution to it. And it was very frustrating. So in 1942, when Dr. Pincock became the provincial psychiatrist, he went on a 10-state tour in the U.S. looking for some new solution. And he went to New York, he went to Ohio, he was in Minneapolis, and he didn't hear a single peep about Alcoholics Anonymous in 1943 in any of those. He was visiting psychiatric facilities. But when he got back to Winnipeg, he was talking to this fellow who'd been a member of our legislative assembly or something, who'd been at the Yale School of Alcoholic Studies doing some research, and this fellow said, "I've heard of this new phenomena called Alcoholics Anonymous." And Dr. Pincock said, "What? I've never heard of this." Anyways, so that fall, his assistant went to Minneapolis, and Dr. Pincock said, "Could you see if you could find out anything about this mysterious new program?" And his assistant came back, and he was he not only had a big book in hand, but he was full of enthusiasm because he'd actually gone to AA meetings at the Nicolette Group in Minneapolis. And I think for those two men, it must have been a very exciting time because they found some hope to help their patients. What Dr. Pincock did was he started thinking about the patients he was treating, and he contacted a couple of fellows who he thought might be willing to try this new program. And their names were Percy and Greta. And I have to say, at this point, when I look back at some of the things Dr. Pincock wrote later, he gave a huge amount of credit to those men who were willing to admit they were alcoholics and to take responsibility for their own recovery. They might have been really desperate, but it took a lot of courage, and he gave a lot of credit to the alcoholics at that time who were willing to experiment with Alcoholics Anonymous. They got together in the psychiatric library, and they wrote to New York for some literature, and two fellows from the Nicolette Group drove all the way up to Winnipeg to give them some advice on how to have a meeting. And I have to say here, when we talk about our friends in AA, those two men from Minneapolis, for the next year, drove up almost weekly to Winnipeg to go to the first meetings and to help the new group get started. Now, for those of you who don't know, Minneapolis is about a 7-hour drive south of Winnipeg these days. Back then, I'm sure it was longer. And about 5 of those months, you could have a blizzard come in and blow you off the road. So I thought that was a huge commitment on the part of those two men from Minneapolis to help us. They started meetings in 1944, and it was the Winnipeg Group, they called themselves. And they met in each other's houses, and they had a third fellow that they brought in named Alec, so he was our third AA person. So those were the founders of AA in Manitoba. And by 1946, they had 18 members, so they were doing pretty good. And it's really sad. One of the sad notes to take at this point is that in that June of 1946, four members of the Winnipeg group were going to Bemidji, Minnesota to an AA function, and they were in a terrible car crash. And two of the men died, and one of them was Percy, the founder. So he didn't even get to be sober 2 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I think is really sad. I hope to, you know, I just think that's sad. Anyways, but now let's see, what else happened? In 1947, by 1947, they had a permanent club room, and they decided to have open meetings so their wives could come, so their non-alcoholic wives could know what this mysterious Alcoholics Anonymous was all about. And I thought it was really interesting. The wives even started their own group, and it was called Semper Fidelis, which in Latin, I had to look this up, means always faithful or loyal. And I thought, I wonder if we would get a group like that going today. Maybe not, but anyways. And it was in 1947 that that group had its first split. I think it might have been over the wives thing. I'm not sure. And so the Assiniboine group was formed. And then the next year, there were four or five French-speaking people in the Winnipeg group because there's a big part of Winnipeg, St. Boniface, that is French. And so they went back to their own side of the river and started their own group called the St. Boniface Norwood group. And then the next year, I don't know all the details, but the Winnipeg group had a big blow up and they split again. And the Alano group was formed. So I think that's how AA gets started everywhere, isn't it? You know, we have a disagreement. We start another group. So by 1950, there were four groups in Winnipeg. Now, there's no record that I can find of when the first woman joined Alcoholics Anonymous in Manitoba. I wish I knew who she was. But I do know that in 1953, there was a woman named Isabel that Dr. Pinkock was treating, because he had stayed very involved with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was treating this woman, and she said to him that she would really like to have a woman's meeting. And so he put her in touch with some other women who were in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in February 1953, 12 women from three of the already existing groups got together and had a meeting and called it the Winnipeg Women's Group. And that's my home group. And we believe we are the oldest women's group in the world that has met continuously since the beginning. So we just had our 62nd birthday. So we're very proud of that. I have to tell you, when I joined the group 24 years ago, those founders' names of our group, those 12 women, some of them were still being talked about at meetings. And Dr. Pinkock, who died quite a while before I came to AA, many of the old-timers knew him and spoke so lovingly of him and had actually done their step fives with him. And I wish I had got to meet him, you know. Anyways, the group's first pigeon, ducky, whatever we call them back then, number 13, her name was Vida. And Vida and her husband were very instrumental in starting the Women's Treatment Center in Winnipeg called River House, which was just for women. It was a residential program. I'm an alumni of there. Many of the women in my group have gone through River House for treatment, and in fact, the women from the house, we still pick them up and bring them to our meetings, those that wish to come. And another tradition that has kind of gone on through the years was, in fact, I think Isabel, one of our first founding members, became a house mother at River House. River House opened, I think, in 1966, And many of the people that have been members of our group have worked at River House as house mothers or caregivers, and many of us still go back and speak there on a regular basis. So we have a great attachment to that. Irene was our last active founding member that was there when I came. And she died 4 years when I was 4 years sober. And she actually had drank 5 years after the group started. And 10 years later, she came back. And she was a wonderful lady, the little bit that I knew her. We also had several inactive members that I think were in nursing homes. And you know, they still were sending money to support the group sometimes. I thought that's the way to go out in a nursing home, sober, supporting my home group. Way to go. There have been many, many really legendary women that have gone through my group. They sponsored us, they've befriended us, and they've loved us into sobriety. And I think it's reflected in all of us that have been through there. I was so relieved when I went there. There was all this long-term sobriety, and I was so relieved to find all these old-timers. I was scared AA was a revolving door, and I found these women that had been sober a long time. And I thought, you know, I really want to stay sober till I die. I mean, I'm going to do it one time, day at a time, but I want to stay sober. And in fact, the woman that I asked to be my sponsor, she was 14 years sober at the time, and her sponsor still kind of treated her like she was a newcomer sometimes. So I thought, well, I got to stick around if I'm, you know, really going to be accepted here. In many, many ways, my group remains unchanged from the very beginning. We meet on Monday nights. Our meetings are always closed. We tried an open meeting back in 1977 for a birthday night, and so many people came, we never did it again. It was crazy. I wasn't there, but I'm told it was crazy. We study the steps. We cycle through them three times a year. And on the last Monday of the month, we have birthdays. And we have a male or female speaker come in and speak at our birthday night. The only non-alcoholic speaker ever allowed to speak at our group was Dr. Pinkock. He was allowed, but nobody else. From the earliest days, members were encouraged to go to other meetings because one meeting a week doesn't cut it sometimes. But you know, back in the days when the group began, there was such stigma around women alcoholics that many women only came on Monday nights to our group. And it was so important for them to have a safe and secure place to be at. For the first 50 years of our group, we rented our Monday night space from the Assiniboine group. But in 2001, we decided to strike out on our own. We were looking for a location that could help with special needs, that had wheelchair accessibility. And so over the last 62 years, we've met in seven locations. And this past January, we just moved into our newest location, and we're now meeting in a synagogue. And it's worked out really well. We like it there, so it's good. It's sort of, you know, interesting. As time passes, now, you know, we're starting to lose our third and fourth generation of long-term sobriety women out of our group, and it's hard to see. It's hard to lose those members. At 24 years sober, I'm kind of in the middle now, you know? In the early days, the women that went to our meetings dressed up. They got all dressed up. They wore hats and gloves. I mean, they were going out. They looked good. And my sponsor remembers that it as being a predominantly sort of white, middle-class women who hid their drinking from their husbands. And when I listen to my sponsor tell a few stories about her drinking, I think her husband must have thought she was a clumsy thing because she broke more bottles while dusting that he had to replace. And my favorite one was having the bag of them fall over in the back seat of the car and the caps came off, and that's why they were all empty when he went to get them out. You know, I thought, really? He believed this? Okay, you know? Okay. Anyways. In the early days, there were teacups and saucers to have your coffee out of or your tea, and, of course, ashtrays to wash. And there's talk of how the newcomers were sent to chatter while they clattered and did the dishes after the meeting. And one of our old-timers, she still claims that she was almost driven insane by the tinkling of charm bracelets during the 1970s. She still will talk about that. Today, if you come to my group, you'll find women in jeans and T-shirts. They'll be filling up their travel mugs. There's still home baking often, though. We're still in there. And we're a much more diverse group. You know, we have, and I'm just going to touch on a few because often I don't know how diverse we are until somebody says something. But I know we have gay women and straight women. We have Catholic women and Jewish women. We have white women, Aboriginal women, Métis women, and there's probably tons other that I don't know about. But we're a very healthy mix. Our sharing really focuses on the steps, and we like to really laugh a lot. I really like the constant review of our steps. That way I can't skip the ones I don't like. They're in my face, you know, three times a year, minimally. Since the 1960s, I think there's always been two or three women's groups in Winnipeg, you know, that have started and folded. Ours has gone along steady, but in the last 10 or 15 years, I've noticed that there's a lot of women's meetings that have started up. A lot of the big mixed groups now set aside a time for their group to have a women's only meeting. So obviously there's still a real need for women's meetings in our city. And I think, you know, that's probably reflected elsewhere too. I just want to say that I feel so fortunate that 70 years after AA was founded in Manitoba, that I can still feel the impact of those early pioneers, you know, in my sobriety. And I'm especially grateful to Dr. Pincock, who cared enough to help us seek a solution that still works. And I think it's really neat that Leonard, one of those same types of guys, is here today. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Robin. Robin's story reminded me of a couple of things that in my career. First of all, Minnesota. When she mentioned these guys driving up from Minnesota, when I was charged with setting up our first rehab center in Alberta, a place called Henwood, about 45 years ago, I had this group of guys, and I didn't know any of them really, but they came out to Henwood one day and said, "Look, we've all been through a place called Hazelden in Minnesota. And we know a little bit about alcoholism." And they actually, there were four or five of them, and they actually agreed with each other for the first few minutes and said, "If you need help with this place, getting this started and getting this off the ground, we'll help you." And that became my kind of senior advisory group that I could lean on and call on, because many times I was dealing with government for funding and I was trying to get a program together that would actually do something. These guys would gather around me on a regular basis and say, "This is what we might suggest, and this is what you might be able to do, and this is what we can help you with." And it was a wonderful, supportive experience. And what they did then, too, is they had this one group in Edmonton that met in a guy's office for lunch once a week. They invited me to that group. So I went weekly to an AA meeting in a guy's office that gradually registered itself in New York as the Grandin Group. And after going to that meeting for 25 years, they adopted me. And they said, "I'm now an honorary drunk, and I'm one of the few that has a membership plaque on my wall at home that shows that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous." And so I say my debt to AA has been very strong. The other thing that Robin mentioned was that many times things come out of arguments and disagreements. Well, I went to that group when I came here as a trustee, I'd been going to that group already for over 30 years. And I didn't know until I came to New York with the General Service Board that alcoholics didn't always agree with each other on everything. Because my group experience going to that group was everybody always agreed and was supportive of each other and was courteous and polite and, you know, all those things. Anyway, enough of that. Our next speaker is Tom from Saskatchewan.
I'm just going to rescue my water so you don't drink it.
Yes.
Don't want to drink it.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And I would like to welcome you all to the Western Canada region, Meet Your Neighbors. And a special welcome to those from other areas and regions. I thank you as well, and thank the powers that be for the invitation to participate in this session. And it is an honor to share the panel with these fine people whom I've traveled with, served with, and am privileged to call friends. Our Western Canada region is one of eight regions that geographically comprise the U.S.-Canada service structure. And our region, as has been mentioned, includes four areas: Area 79, BC, Yukon; Area 78, Alberta, Northwest Territories; Area 91, Saskatchewan, my home area; and Manitoba, Area 80. And our region is geographically the largest of the eight regions, at over 5 million square kilometers, or for our American friends, 1.9 million square miles. And our estimated Western Canada regional AA population is approximately 31,000 in about 1,800 groups, making us the smallest region in terms of AA membership and number of groups. And that is out of a total U.S.-Canada membership of some 1.4 million, with number of groups totaling roughly 65,000. The sparseness of population and the vastness of our geography present us with many wonderful challenges in carrying our message to those who may need it, as well as staying in contact with each other. But as I have learned in my own recovery, what might seem to be the biggest handicaps and liabilities have often been transformed by the grace of a higher power into my greatest assets. I believe that we're blessed in many ways by the challenges of distance. Because of the distances between us, we have to travel many hours to and from our many gatherings. And it is in those precious spaces of time, as we travel together, that we are given the quiet and the time to build relationships with each other, to meditate, and to reflect. In the busyness of our daily lives, that may be one of the key components of our recovery that is sometimes most lacking: the absence of distractions, and that's the time to seek through prayer and meditation. And you can add to that, though, as well, the beauty and majesty of nature that surrounds us in our region. And you have a recipe for peace, serenity, and some conscious contact. My home area, 91 Saskatchewan, with an estimated 275 groups and some 3,000 members. And we are spread out as well over approximately 648,000 square kilometers, or 250,000 square miles. My home group is located in the small rural village that I live in, Vibank, Saskatchewan. It has around 500 residents, and our group claims about 14 members. I have had the opportunity to serve AA in a number of capacities, all a direct result of being willing to serve and putting up my hand, being available. I served as the regional trustee from the Western Canada region from 2004 to 2008. And so I thought I might talk just a little bit about the role of the regional trustee, how they came about, and the purpose that they serve. Now, there are eight regional trustees serving on the 21-member General Service Board, the Western Canada Regional Trustee being one of them. And regional trustees are responsible to the General Service Board, and they are not representatives of the region in any political sense. The board came into being in 1938 under its then name, the Alcoholic Foundation. And its composition and numbers have evolved over the years. The first board consisted of 5 members, and today's 21. In earlier years, it was composed almost entirely of New Yorkers. And this was due primarily to the trustees' close proximity to the headquarters, which were located in New York, and the costs and the time associated with travel was prohibitive. Air travel was still in its infancy and not readily accessible or affordable. But this situation led to a perception in the outlying areas that the New Yorkers were running the show. And it was feared that should serious errors of judgment occur in the future, the fellowship just might say, the New Yorkers did this or made a mess of that. If the board had a more widespread geographic composition, the groups would feel a deeper sense of ownership and responsibility for their services. And the presence on the board of a number of trustees from around the U.S. and Canada would express that fact and symbolize that the board is truly a countrywide undertaking, which would generate more widespread participation and support. And the board would then reflect a more accurate cross-section of the general AA population as well. The regional trustees would bring a regional flavor to the board and bring the unique perspectives from their region to the General Service Board and its deliberations, broadening its insights and usefulness. Regional trustees are representatives of the General Service Board and serve AA as a whole. They bring to the board's discussion a broad, reliable cross-section of AA experience that is invaluable. They provide a year-round liaison to the board from the membership, reporting on actions of the board and explaining the workings of the General Service Board to the AA membership. And again, regional trustees are not responsible to their region in any political or representative sense, and nor do they get involved in or express opinions on local issues that arise in their regions. That, then, is an overview of the region and the regional trustee, its purpose and reason for being. AA came to Saskatchewan in 1947. In Regina, a man by the name of Bob H. wrote to Akron, Ohio for information on AA, and in return received a copy of the Big Book and other literature. It is recorded that Bob was the manager of the Saskatchewan Brewery Association at that particular time, and he was very concerned because of his profile of his anonymity. And it always takes two. And AA number two was a man named Sandy Kay. He had heard of AA in Calgary and took the train to Calgary, found AA, and also received the name of the anonymous Bob back in Regina. Sandy returned to Regina, contacted Bob, who wished to remain anonymous, and together they were the spark that ignited AA in Saskatchewan. You just can't make that stuff up, can you? Other early members either traveled or wrote for information on this new beacon of hope that had appeared on the horizon, and it was pretty much a word-of-mouth proposition. AA made an appearance in other parts of the province in and around the same time, and in a similar fashion. Word of mouth, travel out of the province to get more information and literature. When the General Service Conference project was launched in 1951, AA Saskatchewan became Area 91, and they sent Dr. J.F., and his initial is R, a physician from CAMSAC, as its first delegate to the second conference in April of 1952 as a Panel 2 delegate. And we certainly do stand here today on the shoulders of giants. Today, Area 91 service structure is well established and with 19 districts functioning. Because of the length and the breadth of the area, stretching from the 49th parallel to the 60th, and also because of many cultural and language barriers that do exist, particularly in the northern two-thirds of the province, there are many challenges in trying to ensure that the hand and the message of AA reaches the ear of all who may wish to try it. Try we must, and with the example of perseverance and determination exhibited by our pioneer members and all who came after them, we will continue to work to that end. My sobriety date is November 14, 1983, and as I mentioned earlier, my home group is the ViBank group. And I owe everything, from the moment I came in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous to the attraction, to the welcome, to the genuine welcome and the open arms that greeted me. And it was attraction and encouragement and invitation all the way along that gave me the courage to join a home group, because I was a floater for the first 3 years. And it was an invitation to join a group. It was an invitation to get in service. It wasn't a, that'll be good for you, you should do that. It was a, why don't you come with us? We need. I can think of a number of different occasions in my journey where they needed my help for something. Could you come and help us this weekend? Had no idea what they were talking about. And so I would just invite you and encourage you to never underestimate the power in a simple invitation, a simple extended hand to anyone, to please come and help us. And you'll change their life, and you might even save it. So again, welcome to the 80th celebration of the birth of a movement and a fellowship that should never have been able to get off the ground, ever. And here it is. And if that isn't enough evidence of the efficacy and the power of the principles that underlie this movement and this fellowship, June the 10th, 1935, the glamorous beginnings of Alcoholics Anonymous. A doctor who's being tapered off, still jittery, like I'm jittery, but not for the same reasons, being administered a bottle of beer in the parking lot of the hospital where he was about to perform an operation to calm him down a little bit. And that was the last drink of one of our co-founders. That's pretty glamorous, eh? In the back seat of a car in the parking lot of a hospital. And here we are today. So I just really, really encourage you all to celebrate this marvelous, marvelous experience called Alcoholics Anonymous and pass it on. Just keep passing it on. And thank you very much again for the privilege.